regular meeting of the Joint Policy Committee. So let's look if we're calling to ourselves to order. Do we have a quorum? Don't think we have a quorum yet, but we're here. Mark says he has two egos, so that should count for two. All right. That means, Zach, you've got four.
We've listened.
All right. So the first item, four votes, right? First item is approval of the Joint Policy Committee minutes of January 18th. If we don't have a quorum, we're going to have to come back to this. Okay. So we have a motion, a second on the floor. We're going to come back to it later. All right. We will move on to item three, which is the Regional Economic Development Strategy. And as everyone recalls, we've had a fair amount of discussion here about whether and in what form JPC would participate in the development of a regional economic development strategy. And we've heard there from the business community that there's been some interest. So we schedule for today a presentation by a coalition of Berea business organizations about how this would occur. So I'm going to ask the team to come up here. Linda Best, I know, is going to introduce her colleagues. Linda Best is the executive director of the Contra Costa Council, and she is here with folks from San Mateo, East Bay, Bay Area. So why don't we have you come up here? So we were going to have a presentation and then some discussion about what direction we see JPC taking working with business community.
Terrific. Thank you, Chair Joy. I appreciate it. Linda Best with the Contra Costa Council, and our team is up here. Karen Engel with East Bay EDA, Roseanne Faust with SAMHSA, and Catherine Lyon with the Bay Area Council. So we really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today and talk about some recommendations that we have. As you know, we finished, completed the economic assessment, regional economic assessment that was completed last year, and we now think we have an opportunity to build on that to develop an economic strategy plan for the nine-county Bay Area, and this would be, from our perspective, a very action-oriented plan. And also want to take note of the other efforts that are ongoing that we think are complementary to what this plan would be. So we have the Sustainable Community Strategy, certainly, and then the HUD Regional Plan for Prosperity. So with that sort of a context, I think we're at a unique time in the development of these plans, and so this is a great opportunity. And so I'd like then to introduce Karen, who will talk about what we're proposing today.
Great. Thank you very much, Linda, and thank you for the opportunity to come speak about this very important issue with all of you. We have been speaking with staff and a number of other stakeholders about the opportunity to really look at a nine-county-wide economic development strategy, and we, as a group, and again, the loose coalition that Linda and I co-chair, but very much loosely with all of the nine regional economic development and business associations around the nine-county region. And that group has been meeting off and on really monthly for a few years now, primarily to assist in providing the economic development perspective and business view of a lot of the regional planning that is going on. So it's that coalition that we're here informally representing. And that coalition has agreed that a nine-county-wide economic let's call it action plan, would be a very good thing. And as Linda said, it seems that there's a unique opportunity right now in that when you think of our economy in terms of the three E's, economics, equity, and the environment, we have two robust initiatives with Plan Bay Area being the environmental E, and the HUD Prosperity Plan, a grant opportunity that would really focus more on the equity E. And so part of the proposal that we'd like to discuss with you today is how do we inject something from the economy E. And for that, our suggestion is really that it be a business-led but obviously inclusive exercise that looks at the region's economy and provides a series of recommendations for strategies, tactics, actions that would then sit next to and align with the SCS and the HUD Prosperity Plan. So we're here to talk to you a little bit about that idea. We think it's a discussion. We obviously have ideas, and we're here to inform you of what the other coalition's members are thinking as well. But how we do that, the timing for that, and the implementation thereof is what we'd like to discuss with you today. I'll leave it to Catherine Lyons from the Berea Council, as the coalition has gotten behind the idea and would like to recommend that the Berea Council actually lead this formation of the action plan with the support of the Berea Council Economic Institute, and as Linda said, that it be built on the economic assessment that the Institute completed last year.
Sure. Thanks, Karen. So our proposal, or you know, at least an initial thought on how we can go about doing this, is forming a task force within the Berea Council, which would be inclusive of the organizations on the Bay Area Business Coalition, but also, you know, widening our voice, I guess, so to speak, with other industry groups, with local chambers of commerce, with, you know, a wider variety to make sure that we're capturing really the business voice in this process. I think it's important to reiterate that, you know, the data and analysis would be coming from the Economic Institute, the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, building, again, off the regional economic assessment that was commissioned by the JPC last year. I think that there's some really good a really good framework there that we can use as our foundation for this effort. So the Economic Institute would kind of build in and fill in the gaps of that study, and then really turn it to us to and that task force within the council to take a look at, you know, given the data and the analysis that we have, what are the recommendations and priorities that we'd like to see happen in order to, you know, resulting in increased economic growth for the region. So I think that's a summary.
Did I talk about who would be on the committee?
Who would be in the committee? Sure. So, like I said, it would be the members of the business, Bay Area Business Coalition, and membership of our organization. We'd absolutely open up to that, which are the actual individual businesses and corporations in the Bay Area. I think I also mentioned other industry groups, chambers of commerce, etc.
Did I? Any other E's?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Thank you. and yeah, absolutely. So I think Karen said that this is an inclusive, we want to make this an inclusive effort. And so I think it's important that we do have voices of equity and environment folks on this committee and lending, you know, their opinion into this effort. So.
Good morning, everyone. I want to thank you all for letting us come up here and share these ideas with you, and I'm batting cleanup, so we are going to talk about how all of these different efforts, both from the HUD Prosperity Working Grant perspective, the Plan Bay Area, as well as our idea of an economic action plan, could be knitted together. What we would like to suggest as a point for discussion is to have the JPC consider putting together a task force where there would be two members of each of the entities I just described, so Plan Bay Area, the Economic Prosperity Group, and the Economic Action Plan. And those individuals would be charged with taking the three completed documents from each of the entities and ferreting out all the alignment that will exist in each of them, and then coming back to the JPC to present how each of the documents align with each other and how they could possibly be used going forward. So you'd have it all in a package. So that is a point we'd like to discuss today for consideration.
The three, explain more the three different, so everyone has the complete sense, the three different documents you're talking about.
The Plan Bay Area, so right. The Sustainable Community Strategy, the HUD Economic Prosperity Grant, and all the work that is being done right now on that, and then the Economic Action Plan, the economic assessment based off of the Bay Area Council Economic Institute.
And the Economic Action Plan is being developed by the Bay Area Council?
Economic
or the Bay Area Economic Institute, right. Sean, yes. Sean's here, right. So explain that a bit more, the action plan.
So In our understanding of successful regional economic development strategy formation is it's got to be something that represents obviously all of the stakeholders in the economy, which are many, but our feeling was that it should be business-led, so informed by those closest to some of the market trends and economic opportunities and challenges that face the region. So that was our decision about asking the Bay Area Council if they would help lead that effort. That said, they would create a task force that would be an inclusive task force that would, again, incorporate folks representing the other E's, but try and also represent the entire Bay Area geography and the entire the major other elements of the business community. I think a common flaw we have in these discussions is that we think sort of the business community could speak with one voice. And so we acknowledge that it's big business, small business. There are a variety of very important industry sectors that we need to consider. I think the effort would be that the Bay Area Council and the coalition members would work with you to form a task force that was representative of all those things.
And if I could just add, as a reminder, we're building on the framework that was established by the Regional Economic Assessment, which has a lot of great data. So this is the next step, really, in taking that to the action steps and prioritizing steps that we can take to grow the economy.
So with that, again, maybe close with more of how you see the from your standpoint, how you see the Joint Policy Committee's role in aligning these documents, and what's the end product of that?
So the end product would be is once the documents, each of the individual documents are finished, is for two members from each of the entities that completed the documents would be brought together to look at all three, align the objectives and the goals and anything in it, because there will be a lot of alignment with the whole idea of economic growth and prosperity, and then bring them back to the JPC as here is how the three documents were integrated or could be integrated or could be beneficial to the nine county Bay Area. So that would be the process.
Great. I think we also have discussed that the JPC could have a role in the task force as well. And be a part of those formative conversations.
Great. So. Okay. Anything else you wanted to add? Okay. Thank you. So that was going to form the context for our discussion. So we'll go around and Mark, questions first. Maybe questions of our presenters.
Not so much a question, just as kind of a request that there be some type of an actionable item that marries up with the abilities of the JPC to promulgate action, which is kind of a nebulous idea in and of itself. But some type of action item. I mean, the theories are great, but what actually could we promulgate that would actually help the economic ends of the Bay Area? I mean, it's a difficult task coming up, with the sub-regional needs and the regional needs and marrying those together along with the small and large business. But if there's something that if we could get an overlay of what this body could actually do, assuming we can do anything, would be very helpful. Thank you.
Brad, is that your light? Yes.
Yes. I'm trying to figure out, you talked about a process, and I heard the process. I didn't hear what a real end product, and it's kind of going back to what Mark was, I think, asking about what's the there? Once we're done with this, what do we have? And so that's the first question. I have one other.
Absolutely. I think so any good strategy is going to result in a sense of not only the analytical framework and findings of where our competitive advantages and challenges lie, but what our priorities are as a region in pursuing the opportunities and addressing the challenges. And the reason why we've all hesitated from calling it an economic development strategy or report is none of us want something that's going to sit on the shelf. What we want to do is get through that part of it and facilitate in working with you to identify a set of priorities and a set of discrete actions. And one reason it's very important that this be a cross-sector collaboration is that the actions are going to need champions or entities who can actually implement them all the way to fruition. And so some of those will likely be completely in your purview, or your commission's purview. Some of them will be in the business community's purview. And so doing the exercise collaboratively and coming up with a series of actions that we can all agree to and take together, clearly demarcating who would be responsible or championing which of the actions, that would be our vision.
So the result, the end product is hopefully a series of actions that we all can take. I'll think about that. But my second question is one of you talked about adding in the other E's into that, and I guess my preference, I'll just say, is I would like to hear kind of unbridled economic movement, and adding the other E's in this part of this process might be just something to get you to inertia. That's a comment.
You know, Brad raises a point. Maybe we talked at our last meeting about how not just this E is involved, but how the equity and environmental E's are involved, because that's the way we consider all of those, right, all of those stakeholders. Your thoughts on that?
In terms of including, you know,
because in the past it's always been equity, economy, environment.
Mm-hmm. So I've been involved in these kinds of regional strategy processes in other metropolitan and statewide regions, and they're tricky exercises, and because you really do want to be all-inclusive and make sure you're incorporating the views of many, many different stakeholders. What I think is particularly challenging in the Bay Area is that you have three major metro nodes. You have 9 counties. We have no central unifying regional governance structure. And so what ends up happening is that we don't easily aggregate what all of the various stakeholders view as priorities and actions that should be taken. And so, yes, we're proposing something that has, at this point, 3 separate documents for each of the 3 E's. What we feel strongly, just as when you went through the SCS process, you were asking for the business voice or perspective in that process. I don't think we can have the economy discussions without at least reflecting some of that perspective. We would want to lead it in a way, again, and have businesses chairing the exercise so that we don't get to inertia and we don't get stymied. But I think the idea was, in every silo of the 3 E's, you need perspectives from the other 2 to have it be meaningful and all-inclusive.
Jim?
Oh, thank you. You know, first, Lynn and Karen, thank you for the great work that you guys are doing. I think it's very important work. The question I have is, you know, I'm not quite sure what the end product is. You know, when we look at the diversity, the region, the economic diversity, you know, Santa Clara is a heck of a lot different than Solano County. And do you see at the end of this process that we're going to have strategies that can be applied in all 9 Bay Area counties, or do you see the economy in the core that rises all boats? Or, I mean, what is the end product, and how does it benefit the region, you know, a county like Solano?
I might look just behind you and ask Sean Randolph if he wants to answer that question.
Yeah. Sean, why don't you come up here? Because I think you made a presentation to us and to a number of other agencies within the last few months about the importance of the Bay Area economy within the world and how we're competing really against other economic regions in this country and internationally, and why that's important.
Thanks, John. I suspect that, well, the document would springboard off the regional economic assessment, which was never intended, and it wasn't drafted to be a plan or a strategy. It was really an informational foundation that would identify issues and pathways to focus on if there was to be an actual strategy or action plan. I think, as you said, Jim, the counties are very different, and there are probably things that would come out of this that might be more applicable in one county or another. However, when we look out at the big picture and where is competition happening and why and how our job is moving around the world, where is manufacturing locating, the scale really changes a lot. It's really not as much anymore on the scale of a county, but it's really more on the scale of regions and mega regions. It's what's happening in the Bay Area versus Shanghai or Beijing or Bangalore or London or Tel Aviv. You could go on down the list. So our feeling coming out of the assessment was that it's really important to have, as far as possible, more of an integrated perspective from the region, because on a global and national scale, it's the region that's the competitive unit, and then things get distributed within the region. So our feeling is that to be really competitive and addressing this in a strategic way, we have to have a more integrated regional perspective and think on that scale.
Jim, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. You know, it's a little disappointing, but I understand. You know, I come from a county that's first in the recession and last out, and you know, it'd be nice that.
4 seconds.
Yeah, and so, but that's why I made that statement at the end. You know, this is a, you know, hopefully all boats will rise as the economy gets better, and so. But I was hoping we were going to have specific strategies that business could incorporate within each of the jurisdictions. So, thank you.
Yeah.
I could probably add something to that. We wouldn't want to give the impression at all that it's only at a mega regional level. For example, if I'm just thinking out loud here, one of the things we tagged in the assessment was workforce training and workforce development to make sure that as many people who live here across different economic spectrums have the skills they need to be competitive and to contribute. Well, that gets you into things like community colleges. And are community colleges, which tend to be more fragmented across different communities, are they actually serving in the way they could the needs of industry in terms of supplying the people with the skills that are needed by different sectors economy-wide? So there are conversations that I'm at least aware of within the statewide community college system about getting better integration at the regional level among community colleges, whether in the Bay Area or LA or other places, around industry sectors, and integrating their programs so that companies throughout the Bay Area could access those kinds of workforce training opportunities without having to talk to 15 or 20 different community colleges. So I could see in that kind of a scenario, which is just an example, that would actually take you down to the county level, because what are the community colleges in your county doing? How do they partner with community colleges in neighboring counties? And how do they together integrate with industry? So there, in the end, there is a very much a county level or lower application, but how do the resources in the region work together?
Yes, Mark?
You know, one of the issues is that, you know, global economic changes can drastically change what's going on in the Bay Area, and one of those is the change in the price of energy. And I'm wondering if it would be appropriate to look at something like, what does $10 a gallon gasoline look like in terms of how the Bay Area dynamics work? Are we going to be looking at anything like that so we can anticipate not only where we're at today, but where we might be in 10 or 15 years?
We're going to start looking to each other for the answers. you know, I think the goal would be to look, and Sean's already laid the framework, Sean and John Haveman, analytically. You know, they've already interviewed nearly 100 companies. We've already identified a number of both opportunities and challenges. I don't know if we're going to get into scenarios, but certainly the energy situation is a challenge that we need to address, and I believe that it would be one of those things that we're predicting would be common in each of the three exercises and would probably come up as a major issue going forward.
Okay, because just in that particular instance, I think if we do see $10 a gallon gasoline, it looks, I mean, the whole world changes in terms of the economics of transportation and labor and a number of other issues, and perhaps some of the assets in our Bay Area, which we don't consider assets today, in fact, are assets that should be protected. And I just think if we're really going to look forward, we probably ought to consider something like that.
Dean, is that your light on? Did you want to say something?
You know, a lot of us have been involved in economic planning and the plans stand on the shelf, but I do think that what forces us, I think, to really think globally and regionally. A lot of you probably have heard the story before, but the night it was announced that I was mayor, that my first congratulations came from friends of mine who I went to Berkeley with, who are now working in Shanghai, Changsha, and Beijing, because it was the middle of the day for them, and then it was the banner headline in the Chinese newspapers. So we have this global economy, and in that row, I began to see that the Chinese see the Bay Area as the Golden Triangle. They see us as a region. They don't necessarily, although they may, you know, San Francisco is the more glitzy of all of our cities, but they do see it investment-wise as a triangle. They see, you know, the Port of Oakland, the financial district in San Francisco and Silicon Valley, and that's what they want to see when they come here, since I give a lot of tours. So looking through their eyes, they see it as a region, and becoming the mayor of Oakland and appointing park commissioners, Amy and I had some time doing some MTC lobbying, and we were talking about how when the port did its regional conference, that I learned that I have to care about what happens to railroads out of the agricultural areas, because we're the first port to export them more than we import. We also export a lot of small electronics, so that our ties with Silicon Valley are also critical. So if the Port of Oakland goes down, it affects the whole economy. And I think that if we could look at some targeted things that help us regionally, not only just for trade and export, but long-term growth, it will be helpful. And just maybe just having that discussion's okay, although it would be important. And so, for instance, Jerry is going to China in May, and the Bay Council and many of us have been working for a long time to ask him to reopen those international trade offices in China so that we can increase our exports. So those are kinds of issues you start thinking about that you didn't think about before, because we realize more and more how much we are a part of a Bay Area economy. And you know, whether the Port of Oakland does well, it really will partly rely on how well agricultural products here do well, how small equipment that we send to China, it's not worth for them to produce because they produce them in the billions and we only produce them in the hundred thousands, that there are areas that we, you know, and then be more conscious of that, I think, could be helpful. So anything that brings more planning all together, I think everybody's a little nervous about the balance of business leading versus government leading, but I think we can work that out because in the end, a lot of these on the bigger regional issues as a mega region, those things are just practical that we need to think about them as a mega region and not just as the city of Oakland or the city of the county of Sonoma, but in terms of how we're tied together as an economy.
Other comments? Yes.
I think to piggyback on Mayor Kwan's comment is one of the things that our coalition has talked about time over time is to figure out a way when you're integrating these three plans from Plan Bay Area and the HUD grant and the economic assessment is it will help us explain to the business community how it all works together. Because they are not actively engaged in those other two activities at this point. So for business to be able to understand and to embrace it, you need to explain it. And if you can drill down and have the commonalities between the three, it's going to help you and us kind of further the goals and the objectives that come out of this work.
Mark.
Yeah, my other ego had to speak up, too. I didn't want to leave you without the, saying, you know, give us some actionable items without, I should have followed up with what might be something of interest, maybe to me. I don't know. I can't speak for the rest of my colleagues. But in the area of telecommuting, I mean, to what degree is that going to be a reality? How much is it going to be pulled back? Because that will affect our vehicle miles traveled, you know, our transportation system, and concurrent with that, the goods movement needs of business in the Bay Area, because transportation and zoning are a couple of things not the JPC can handle, but the members of the JPC are intrinsically involved with zoning. And to that end, also, when you look at telecommuting, how much is that going to affect the brick-and-mortar demand for office space and retail? And if you are going to lessen your demand for office space and commercial space, why don't we look at also what is the needs for service commercial, light industrial, R&D zoning, which seem to be overlooked and are getting swallowed up by residential zoning. But what's that going to do to our economic engine if there's no places for our service commercial trucks and our distribution centers for FedEx and UPS? How's that going to impact us, and what guidance could you offer in that realm so we could reduce our VMTs, increase our goods movement, and our transportation efficacy? Thank you.
It seems to me that these three efforts that you're talking about, which are all in and of themselves really good efforts, that the idea is there's always a need to understand how to meld or provide the greater context for all of this. And it seems that it's also useful to understand where, since we do represent regional agencies, where the regional agencies can add value and help achieve more economic success here in the Bay Area, either through removing obstacles we may have or taking proactive actions. I mean, it seems that there may be an opportunity for each of the agencies to look at that, and that seems to be the role we've wanted to play here at the JPC, is how do we remove tensions between the regional agencies, how do we empower the regional agencies to be more effective at what they do. So any thoughts from any of the executive directors after hearing this as well about where the JPC plays an added role? Don't go rushing to the mics here.
Yeah, I'm rushing. Yeah. Well, I first wanted a point of clarification about what's being proposed. So we have three documents that are being prepared, and they're all being prepared with a lot of crossover. One, the SES, two, the HUD Prosperity Plan, and three, the Regional Economic Assessment. And there is a lot of interface with all three documents. Same people were involved in the same forecasts and the same policy levers, et cetera. Are we now saying that the next step is to take those three documents and develop action items from that? And that's without any additional findings or input or research, where we would just simply take a look at those three documents, draft a fourth sort of action step document that would naturally fall out of looking at the three? Is that what's being proposed?
I think the piece that we are really coming to you and saying we're interested in taking some ownership on is the economic action plan. And for that, we're looking at probably, I don't know, we'll have to ask Sean and Catherine, but another 10 to 12 months. The hope is that would be completed about the same time as the HUD Prosperity Plan. And that in and of itself, looking just at the region's economic competitiveness issues, would recommend a series of actions. And that would come to you in partnership with you, would come as input into the JPC's conversations. I know that in discussing this issue with staff and Supervisor Joya, they added the question of, what then happens to the three things, the three documents? They just sit side by side, or is there an effort to really look at how they cross-map? And again, that's, I think, what we're discussing today. We're coming with this proposal that, a few representatives from each of the three efforts actually be charged with that integration and hopefully coming up with some common elements. But I think it's a question of utility and whether you all think that would be an added value.
Well, that may I follow up on this? Is that okay?
Yeah.
I think that was the intent of Plan Bay Area, which was to say that the HUD Prosperity Plan was a series of pilots that we could learn from on the equity side, which is a very difficult subject. The Regional Economic Assessment created the foundation for our projections and laid out the distribution of jobs throughout the Bay Area so we would know exactly what intervening land use or regulatory levers might be available. And the Sustainable Community Strategy, which is the integrated network, needed a whole series of implementing actions on a variety of different subjects. And all of that would be integrated and placed into Plan Bay Area. So I hear what you're saying is there's a fourth document coming, if we go ahead with this, that would take more of an economic development perspective, and I'm not sure whether it's mega regional level, regional level, economic development level, and it could include many steps that are outside the purview of the jurisdiction of the agencies, but could create advocacy for many entities to get behind with respect to where that jurisdiction may lie. Is that a more accurate statement?
I would say so, yeah.
All right, thank you. Zach?
I think there's a fair amount of understandable confusion when we talk about an integrated document. To be clear and fair, this proposal to do a regional economic action plan coming off the assessment is not coming from the Business Alliance. It came from us. It came a little bit from Senator DeSaulnier, but it's really coming here. They're coming and saying, we think this makes sense, but, or and, I shouldn't use the but word, and we think that it should be done in this way. But in the sense of integration, when you talk about everything coming together in the one Bay Area plan, ultimately, in version 2, 3, or 4 of the one Bay Area plan, I hope that's true. But at the moment, I think this is a next step. It's not going to be a totally integrated document. And the point was made, if we try to make it a totally integrated document, it ain't going to happen. So this is that action plan taking cognizance, full cognizance, of the other documents and the other policies. So it will acknowledge that, it will work in that framework, but this is, yes, a fourth document, it does have to be written, that will be an action plan aiming at, I would call it regional, but I won't get into that fight quite yet, economic development strategy.
Yeah, and Zach's right. We started the discussion here, and that's why we invited the business folks to come, but we also said it's not just about the 1E, the economy, it's about the environment and the equity folks as well, right? And so, Julie?
Yeah, you know, and I realize that in this study on the economy, and certainly Sean and Bruce are both there all the time at the Bay Area Economic Institute meetings, but the recurring theme that comes up at those meetings, as I have been there over the last year and a half or so, is in order for the economy to recover and grow, we have some serious questions we have to address with regard to education. So it's really like the fourth E that gets sort of as a subtitle under some of these others and doesn't quite get the attention maybe at our level that it needs to, because frankly we don't have jurisdiction over that side of things. But it's one of those things that seems to me, and I agree with Zach, it can't be in this one Bay Area plan. We're up to our eyeballs.
Plan Bay Area, right? We removed the word one, remember? This is Plan Bay Area, right. No one Bay Area. That's, you know.
Thank you, I stand corrected. Have to know what day of the week it is, what it's called. But Zach is absolutely right. This is one of those necessary steps to getting us to that point, and I would hope that by the time 4 years from now comes and we see the next plan virtually ready to approve, that we actually have the education side of it far more integrated into what we're doing, because we will not survive if we continue with education in the way it's being done right now. And we know that. There are some major changes that have got to take place for our economy to be sustainable. And so it just seems to me that we need to keep that in the back of our minds as we're talking about all these other issues.
And Amy, Julie's reflect.
We
before
answer,
I call,
John,
you're both from Contra Costa, I know.
We answer to you.
So, I know. The Amy Julie show. So, before Amy, I did it again. Julie is reflecting the discussion that occurred, I know, at the ABAG Administrative Committee, which was that the success of the priority development areas that, you know, we've all worked so hard on, ABAG and MTC, are going to be also dependent upon the educational systems that are within those communities. We heard that discussion, so I think I gather you're reflecting that and that's part of the whole Plan Bay Area success, that we're going to achieve that plan with better, you know, priority development areas if we can also understand how that works with improved education. So I know that's part of this. Amy.
Yeah, kind of picking on that same theme, I also think one of the things, and I know this may be stating the obvious, but as we look to this plan, I would hope that it would look at sort of the prosperity around the region. You know, one of the challenges is we have sort of historic economic centers, we have emerging economic centers, we have housing centers, and one of the things that we continue to talk about is this increasing time that people are commuting from their jobs to homes and what that costs individuals and families in the region and businesses. But the other thing I think it's important to say is to really look at the whole prosperity issue and economic development in all of our counties, because I think that there's a uniqueness, but there's also real opportunities. And I recognize that the world sees us as one entity, but I think that prosperity in all nine counties, and however it takes, you know, whatever the, recognizing that they're unique counties and have different job centers, housing centers, economic, you know, levels. So right. I think that's another piece.
So I know we need to move off of this here in a second. This is really important, this discussion. And the idea was whether with this discussion we wanted to move this to have maybe some more, frankly, written description of how this would look. I think if some folks have said what the deliverable is, what the end product is, in melding these three documents and maybe working with our staff and coming back and approving a plan. This is what we want to do. I mean, we were sort of tentative about what we wanted to do. So this is the chance to weigh in on whether we truly do want to work on this. Eric?
Yeah, I just wanted to throw in two last points. I think Jim or Mark raised the issue of the projections of oil going through the roof. I think Portland did a peak oil study, and San Francisco had a major task force anticipating maybe some of it might call it a nightmare scenario, but just with peak oil reaching a certain level where it's going to be so unaffordable for most people that it's going to change quite a bit in the economy. San Francisco study was done in 2009. I think Portland was a few years before, and maybe other counties have looked at that and how it's going to change food access, transportation systems, and lots of other things besides education. So I'm hoping that we look at some of those studies. The other point was that Gene raised about global competitiveness with China. I know San Francisco is promoting China SF and a lot of different programs, but how would the rise of China's consumption as a new modern economy impact kind of the prosperity of the Bay Area, but also that world oil supply and how it impacts how we relate to the East and China as well. But I'm just hoping that those are issues that are part of the study as well.
So maybe, I mean, this is not the last discussion. This is meant to say if we want to pursue this, maybe then Bruce would continue working with the business community representatives in looking at how this would play out with our role, and then come back to us with something very specific that says, you know, this is what we're looking at to with regard to implementing or melding these three plans. Zach,
if it's necessary, I would be happy to make that motion with the caution about your last phrase of melding these three plans.
Yeah, that's not the best word.
That we would move.
These are three distinct plans.
Right. Direct Bruce to continue working with the business coalition to prepare for us a proposal, specific proposal, to develop the economic development action plan based on the needs assessment that has been done.
That also considers the other two E's,
that takes into consideration equity and environment and the reports that are in process those.
Any other comments? Is there agreement that then would come back?
Yeah. So it would come back to us.
Got it. This was an information item. This is direction. If you want to make a motion.
Well, I would like to make a motion
I would like to make a motion just so we get some forward action on this.
Okay. I'll second that.
Okay.
Include the other E's, education and energy.
Just three E's. How many E's do we have? Right. Wait, then we have Mark Ross's ego, right? You're the one that raised it, Mark, not me. All right. So there's a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye. Okay. Actually, speaker. So we did not have speaker cards. Now we have a speaker card. So Gene Kramer. So we're holding off on the vote. Gene, we will hear from speaker.
Item three, and my concern is that you're not taking into real consideration alternatives. Alignment doesn't speak to me. A couple of sessions ago, somebody handed out a paper on adaptation. I don't hear you paying attention to it. Adaptation doesn't mean winner takes all. Okay. It means that multiple organisms at the local level are able to adapt to a new environment or a new element in their environment. And in so doing, they are no worse off and perhaps better off because they are able to form symbiotic relationships. Okay, that creates alternatives. So when we're talking about an economy at a local level, you don't want to impose from the top down elements, new elements in an environment that destroy it. What you want to do is allow the elements in an environment, individuals, groups, cultures, to take advantage of what they know about themselves, apply it to their environment, and say, okay, new element. How do I want to reorganize myself to deal with it? You don't want to kill anybody off. You want to thrive, and you want new ideas and new alternatives. So when you're talking about an economy, do you really necessarily want to just have one way to go from the top down? Or do you want to develop also a local economy that has knowledge about itself and goals for itself that it wants to achieve and is able to do that because they have the economic means to do it? For instance, a banking system where the borrower also owns the money loaned. Now, that takes some thinking to do, but lots of cultures have done it.
Thank you. So there is a motion and a second, and we will have further discussion here after there's been sort of a description of what the work product would be that will be worked on, and we'll come back here. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. We'll continue that, so we appreciate you all being here. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right, item four, we will get an update on our climate change projects. So Bruce will lead that. I think we have two parts to this. One is we'll hear the top findings from our nearly completed climate and energy resilience project, and then BCDC and ABAG staff will update us on more work.
Thank you, and good morning. We have a handout that will be part of what Joe and I are going to mention. We have a lot of material. We have a brief handout that's going around that you can get. So Joe and I are going to do a tag team here and then take your questions. I'm going to present the findings in very short form from the Kresge Foundation-funded needs assessment on climate adaptation in the region. Joe is going to talk about the Resilient Shorelines project, sea level rise in the region. And along the way, we're going to try to, and we won't answer all of them, but we're going to try and get at five of the key questions you asked last time that we presented, when we presented in January. One question from Mr. Sparing, what are organizations doing in the region when we talk about adaptation? And we'll have some examples of that. Mr. Luce asks, what's the end game here? Where are we going with all of this process that we've been explaining? And you'll see somewhat more about that today. Mr. Bates asks, where's the plan? You'll see a bit on that today. Again, not complete answers. Ms. Wirth asked, how are we going to afford all of this? And referenced some of the recent issues in her city, in Orinda, and in others dealing with extreme storm damage in December. And finally, again for Mr. Sparing, when is someone getting authority for this? That was one of the questions. And again, we'll try to get at those as we go through. Just very quickly, let me just ground us again in what we're dealing with. The problem that we're trying to solve is how do we prepare the Bay Area in a robust way, the 9-county region, to deal with the impacts that are here and coming in terms of climate change. So a quick review. We know that California and the Bay Area have warmed over the last number of decades. We know that going forward, the graph on the right, that we are going to get warmer in this region. And this is an interesting slide that Pacific Institute did that tried to take some of the numbers that we talk about that don't make a lot of sense in terms of temperature, 2 degrees Celsius, 4 degrees Celsius, and really relating, in this case, Alameda County summertime temperatures to feel more like Central California by 2030, and those afternoon temperatures to look more like Southern California by the time we get to later in the century. We showed you this one on the left before of how, as we warm in the region over the next few decades, premium quality wine growing areas in purple at the top, kind of the current, as we warm, those premium areas move coastwise as things warm up in the interior and in the Bay Area. And this one on the right we haven't showed you has the same kind of thing, and I'll blow it up. Warmer and drier climates, which we're slated for here in Northern California and in the Bay Area, are going to increasingly favor shrublands and chaparral. We are going to look more like Southern California mid-century and beyond. It's the blue in this, which is chaparral and shrubland. It's the blue cover that we have very little of now in the biggest piece of this map. But under two different warming scenarios, a 2-degree and a 4-degree, you really see that we move much more to that Southern California look here, and the natural systems that go with it, the fire danger that goes with it, a whole series of issues for land use that come up around this. When we talk about heat, we're talking about not just averages and slow changes, but extreme heat days. And these are two graphs. We can run them now for almost every city in the region. This one shows San Francisco and Livermore. And the numbers of days going forward that will hit extreme temperature thresholds. Secondly, big changes in water, and a lot having to do with the Sierra. I was just in Yosemite, actually at 10:15 last night. I was still in Yosemite finishing a talk there to the Local Governments Commission retreat, and you know, it looks like fall there. It's dry. Everything was churning up dust. And now, every year changes, but the overall trend that we see on the graph on the left is more rain, less snow, and more days that we don't freeze in the Sierra. And that has tremendous implications going forward. The graph on the right, in terms of what happens with our water supply for the state, about half of which is dependent upon the snowpack in the Sierra. Third, we've talked at length with this group, and Joe will talk more today. Flooding and sea level rise together, the extreme storms, the increase in sea level rise, that takes the 50-year flood in the Bay Area and will make it a 10-year, once every 10-year flood by 2020 and perhaps one every year, the same kind of flooding by mid-century. And the kinds of things that are happening here already, East Palo Alto with the flooding in December and others. Everyone, as we've said, will be hit here in this region, but some populations will be hit harder. There are a number of studies going on now at Berkeley and other places looking at this one on the left that we showed you a couple months back, overlaying social vulnerability index with sea level rise and trying to see which neighborhoods and which populations get hit there. The one on the right, that's not good. Yeah. Let's see. Nope. Fred. Let's try the clicker. Nope. Give me just a second here, please. Yeah, they will be. They'll be on our JPC website. Well, let me just continue. How's that? Want to see if we can find Fred.
Ezra, we're getting Fred to help out, maybe. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, nothing. Okay, here we go. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. As a Mac person, I'm confounded by PCs periodically. So again, a lot of research going on in terms of different... this one looking at tree cover and impervious surfaces and splitting it out for our region by communities by income level. And finally on this one, this may be our biggest land use impact, is that we may get a number of people who want to move to the Bay Area, because the Bay Area, while it's going to warm, the Central Valley is going to warm more and Southern California is going to warm the most. Looking ahead again here, coastal California will still be the coolest even though we warm, and what will that do in terms of demand on land use from various populations here over the next few decades? So Kresge asked us to do a needs assessment, and we did stakeholder interviews with more than 130 different people in small groups and individually, and a couple of large groups. In the region, talking with water districts, talking with utilities, talking with cities, talking with a range of players here, non-governmental agencies, community-based organizations, and getting their input on three questions. What are you doing right now? What do you need to move forward on climate adaptation? And third, and maybe most importantly, what do we need to do jointly? What do we need to do together to move the region ahead? In addition, we did four special roadmap reports, and they're on our website, and I will send them around, and you might take a look and then maybe look at them later on the website, on four topics that we know are going to be very important to climate adaptation planning in the region, and you see them here on the screen. Equity and community engagement, Kirsten Schwinn from Bay Localize is here. Kirsten, who did the great report on this one. Steve Weissman at Berkeley Law, who did our report on multi-jurisdictional decision-making, Andy Gunther on information for decision-makers and improving that process, and Laura Sasso on win-win strategies that both get GHG reduction and help with adaptation. So that's what we did. We're going to take all this information and add it to all of the learning that BCDC has and ABAG and others in the region who have been working now for a number of years, put all that together and create a series of proposals over the next few months for funding and for moving ahead. The good news is, and that's what we handed out, and Joe will say a little bit more about this.
Gene, this one's for you, so you can read this one. This one's for you.
There'll be a quiz, too. What we handed out, and it's why we handed it out, so you could see it up close and personal. The idea here is there's a lot going on in the region already on climate adaptation and some substantial work by NGOs, some by cities, by water districts, by PG&E, by a variety of players here in the region. And again, this one's on our website with links to all of the various groups that are working on this, but we see projects in the region on public health, certainly a number of projects, the greatest number in Section 2 on sea level rise and extreme storms and the flooding and all from that. And there are projects that go on across the region. If you look on page 5, for instance, 22, 23, 24 are all major studies and projects going on in the South Bay. The Adapting to Rising Tides project, which Joel will talk about, and the regional sea level rise strategy. There are projects on ecosystems. There's the Marin Carbon Project, the North Bay Climate Adaptation Initiative, A lot of work going on by water agencies in the entire region. You'll be happy to know PG&E is doing a lot of work. We had a 2.5-hour meeting with PG&E to go over what they're doing in terms of getting their system ready for extreme storms, for heat, and for sea level rise and all. So that's just a wave at you. That's finding number one. There's a lot out there. Finding number two, these were near universal needs amongst the groups that we interviewed in the region. One, they want someone to organize a campaign that will come and talk to their board, talk to their funders, talk to their boss about the importance of doing climate adaptation planning and doing it now, and the importance of putting time and resources into this. We got that from everybody, whether they're working a lot on adaptation or only working a little. Everybody wants this kind of a science-based story and the narrative as to why we need to be doing this work and how it's going to go forward. Secondly, we have to stop nickel and diming this kind of planning, and we got a very strong message from our interviews that we have to find, and this is tough, but dedicated planning resources. These are going to be significant issues to plan. You cannot just add them on to somebody's existing job. Some of the things cities and others are looking at, they're already looking at these issues. These are not completely out in left field, but to take on this part with climate and all is going to take some dedicated resources. Third, and we got this again from the most sophisticated users and from some who are just starting out, show us what science to use, don't make us guess, and give us some guidance as to what kinds of projections and all we should be using in moving ahead. Help us with this. And finally, on the fourth, on the near universal, tell us what other people are doing, what other projects are going on in the region, where can we learn from, what are partnerships we can develop. I won't go through all of these, but we developed through the interviews a number of other what we would call important strategies to help us accelerate in the region. We had people tell us in more detail what kind of technical assistance cities need. The second bullet there, we had a number of stakeholders say, we need a Bay Area planning process. This is great that there are all these different groups working on this, but we need to do some things together, and we need to organize this in a more efficient manner. That gets to working with state government. That gets to the fourth bullet in terms of hazard mitigation plans, which a number of our interviews brought up. How does this relate to, and how could it be coordinated with hazard mitigation planning? A whole series of things here, and then the last set of these on finding three, certainly more of a focus on the impacts on vulnerable communities. I mentioned Kirsten's report and has a lot of detail on how to move forward with this. Securing resources for the public health sector, which I think I mentioned last time is probably the biggest gap between need and resources, is with our county health departments on all this. And finally, at the bottom, the need to integrate GHG reduction, the mitigation side of the climate world with the adaptation world. None of what we're talking about here today in terms of adaptation is really going to be very possible if we stay on the same emissions path that we're on. And this region has to be involved in a substantial way in that battle. So that's all the input, and there's a ton of it in the reports, and they're on the website. The JPC website. But let me just give you a sketch of where we could be going. And this is subject, again, to much more discussion with our partners over the next few weeks. And then these will become funding proposals to Kresge Foundation, San Francisco Foundation, the state, and others. So the first is we think by July 1 we could have an interim structure in place to coordinate and start to organize and bring together all the different players in the region. It's not a decision-making body, but a coordinating body, and we could have that up and running by July 1st. And then during the year, phase in various services to support major work like the regional sea level rise strategy that Joe's going to go over with you and other key adaptation initiatives. So that's a start on the end game and what the goals would be. I will present just quickly five ways to get there. The first is to create this adaptation center, get it up and running by July 1st. It's an interim place where we can bring together the key players, the water districts, the utilities, the cities, the NGOs, the community-based organizations, bring the players together, see how we're doing, see where we're strong, where we're weak, and have a report back to you on all of that by the end of the year. I think this is a really important piece because this will provide for the first time more of a there for climate adaptation work that, as you can see, more than 100 groups are getting involved with. This will start to organize, not to take over, but to organize and coordinate amongst those players. And we would then, as we get funding, we can do the first part with the existing JPC funding, but as we get funding, we could add in these services that people identified as needed to help them move forward. The regional campaign about the importance of this, the kind of ag extension services, helping people with their projects, the Bay Area Climate Services, which is all about providing the right science, and pilot projects with counties. The second is we have to mount a campaign, and we have to get funding to organize this. Someone's going to need to take this on as their job. The campaign for dedicated resources. This has got to be working with regional and state leaders, with a whole series of players, public and private, that could be involved here. If we don't crack this one, we can be talking about adaptation for a long time and not getting very far with the planning and with the implementation. We would look at all significant sources, but this has to get taken on in a major way by somebody. We need to find the resources to do number two. Third, we need to create a place where we can come together to talk about finance and governance and these major issues that are really going to be difficult to deal with in various ways. We need a place where we can bring business and government and community-based leaders and university leaders and all together to talk about these things in a forum where we can have some real time to get at this. And I would say maybe most importantly here, how do we make this an economic imperative for the region? I think we have to do more of that kind of discussion with real leadership in the region moving forward. Fourth of the five, to fund and support a vulnerable communities initiative that would work with community-based organizations. It would involve them in the process, in the adaptation process, in the design from the beginning, and in all key steps. It would look at impacts on those communities while we're looking across the board at impacts in the region, and it would invest in existing community resilience work. And finally, to wrap up, we need, and we think this would be the fifth proposal on adaptation, is to work much more seriously on GHG reduction. Adaptation, again, to underline, that we're talking about in the region is going to eventually be swept away if we continue globally on the emissions path we are on. So what can we do as a region? We could join with other regions on looking at the strategies like the economic strategies like a carbon tax that together could move the country forward. I can't overestimate the importance of this piece, that while it may be outside the scope, and it is, of the JPC or of the regional agencies or of our region, we've got to join together with other regions to work on this, or the work that we're talking about in adaptation is going to be pushed aside in the coming decades. So this one's a very important part of adaptation, that we take GHG reduction and we marry it with adaptation so they become one program. If we can take on those five things, some will take new funding, and that's what we're going after back to Kresge and San Francisco Foundation and others. We think we can really provide tremendous support in the region for the Regional Shorelines Project, sea level rise and all, which Joe is going to outline right now, and to help the region move forward. Thank you.
Why don't we have Joe make his presentation, then we'll take... Great. And then I think we're going to have, as part of B, some IBAC staff also. Are you providing anything further?
Yeah.
Okay.
All of this will be up on our website. We now have a more functioning JPC website.
Oh, there we go.
And we'll get mine down and get Joe's back up here. There you are. You're right here. They're all on the website right now. In draft, we are making some final edits to them based on input from stakeholders. We had a workshop here 2 weeks ago with 115 stakeholders from around the nine counties, public, private, nonprofit.
Thanks for your patience with our technological challenges up here. Today I'd like to brief you on the Joint Policy Committee's efforts to create resilient shorelines in the Bay Area by developing a regional sea level rise adaptation strategy that considers the earthquake mitigation and earthquake recovery as part of the strategy. And this is a project that's being led by BCDC and ABAG with assistance from MTC and the Air District, and as a part of ABAG, that includes the San Francisco Estuary Project. And this project, or this presentation, was developed in partnership with staff from all those groups. So today we're going to talk about the progress that we've made on the approved work plan that the JPC adopted back in September, and how, as Bruce described, we're really working to integrate both across the agencies and with the Joint Policy Committee staff, how we're seeing the project evolve based on what we've learned in the need to incorporate earthquake considerations, as well as looking at possibilities for accelerating the project. Can we look at a schedule that might get us there sooner than what was laid out in the September work plan? And finally, eventually, as Bruce described all those impacts, we may be looking at a multi-impact strategy for the region. That's an adaptation strategy that looks at a wide variety of impacts. And Bruce handed out, I think, a list of about 90 projects that are underway in the region to deal with adaptation. And we tried to take a look at those from a geographical distribution standpoint and also sort of scale. And as you can see, the national, state, and regional efforts are listed out in the Pacific Ocean there on the left. But there's there's a lot of activity, and there's a broad distribution, and there's greater activity in some places than others, like Santa Clara County or Alameda County, for example. But the important thing is that there's activity everywhere in the region on adaptation, and so we need to find ways to leverage that activity with our effort. And looking at the scale, you can see that it's broadly distributed with a great deal of effort at the regional scale, and quite a bit also at the state, local, and sub-regional. And it appears that there's not much activity at the national level, but in point of fact, there are a few major projects underway that are federally supported in the region, like the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project, the Adapting to Rising Tides Project, and the South Bay Shoreline Study. Two of those are primarily in Santa Clara, San Mateo counties, and a bit in Alameda. So looking at who is undertaking this work, all these 90 projects, we found that there's a considerable amount of non-governmental activity underway, and that is really important to note, because we are going to have to figure out ways to leverage the work that these people are undertaking. Obviously, the government is got the largest share, but I think and public-private partnerships are also important. But we are going to have to find a way to get everybody pulling on the rope in the same direction. So, how do we go about leveraging all this activity and coordinating the work that all these people are engaged with? Now, Bruce has laid out an approach that involves creating a convening function, which is very important, and we're looking at finding ways to fund that strategy. But going forward, we have to come up with, in the Resilient Shorelines Project, a way of integrating with these other efforts that are going on. So the structure that we'll talk about later has that in mind. So the staff worked together to come up with an approach to the project that includes articulating a goal so that we all know where we're headed. And the goal, generally stated, says that we will develop a regional resilience strategy that will increase the preparedness and resilience of the Bay Area communities to sea level rise and other climate change impacts while protecting the ecosystem ecosystem and community services. So this goal is broadly stated so that it can both address the earthquake issues I mentioned earlier and eventually perhaps allow the project to be expanded to take on other issues as we develop capacity for those. Thanks. Going back to the approved work plan that the Joint Policy Committee adopted back in September, it was a conservative schedule that anticipated a project lasting about 9 years and costing about $20 million. And integrating with the sustainable community strategy. So task one is to generally be completed this year, and it's completing ongoing work. I'll give you an update on that in a minute, the progress that we're making there. Task two was to conduct work around the region and learn lessons from that effort to integrate into the 2017 sustainable community strategy and to complete the strategy by the time that the third SCS is set to be adopted in 2021. Now, one of the advantages of this approach and what we hope to do is to integrate with the greenhouse gas mitigation efforts so that we can, to the extent that we can, get these win-win benefits that Bruce mentioned so that we get efficiencies and integration between the two efforts. So the guiding principles that we are proposing as part of the strategy would be based on efforts that would be based on those that guided the preparation of Plan Bay Area, to work closely with local governments, to work with diverse stakeholders in a broad public process, and to address both the built and natural environments in a integrated fashion, and to promote sustainability. So the process I'm about to describe was based on a look at other successful Bay Area planning projects, such as the Plan Bay Area effort, the Adapting to Rising Tides project that we're conducting in Alameda County, the Regional Resilience Initiative that ABAG led to address earthquake issues, and the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project. And what we proposed was a draft outline of an approach that we think could yield the kind of, I don't want to say consensus, but agreement as to how we move forward on challenging or dealing with these challenging issues. And of course, the Joint Policy Committee would be the decision-making body with the executives from the Joint Policy Committee agencies as the sort of backstop of authority for guiding staff work. The project management team we propose would be made up of the Joint Policy Committee agency staff, lead staff, as well as integrating the California Coastal Conservancy and the Regional Water Board, because we think that there are going to be a number of issues that are going to need to be addressed along the shoreline that will require a good deal of their input. Building on the successful Plan Bay Area approach, we think an agency working group made up of local governments, NGO representatives, and others that works closely with the project management team on an ongoing basis will be important, and that we're going to need a good deal of technical advice and input, as well as there was a good deal of talk in the earlier item about how we integrate with the three E's of economy, equity, and environment. And so we're proposing a sustainability council that draws on the input from all of those points of view, and, of course, a very public process. So what I'd like to do now is update you on the progress we've made on addressing task one, which is to complete the ongoing work that we have that we feel, builds towards the regional resilience strategy, and that includes wrapping up the Adapting to Rising Tides project in Alameda County, at least the phase one portion of that. And BCDC's always also has some research projects underway to address innovative adaptation strategies for wetlands, as well as understanding how head of tide is going to change and migrate up tributaries to the bay, and what and how we can go about addressing the impacts of that in resilience planning. Bruce has just briefed you on the Barrier Climate and Energy Project and the Regional Earthquake Resilience Initiative that ABAG led addressed, as I mentioned, earthquake mitigation and earthquake recovery, and developed some policies for local governments to consider in addressing that. And BCDC and is partnering with the San Francisco Estuary Project that's leading Flood Control 2.0, along with flood control managers in the Bay Area, to take a look at tributary streams and how we can mobilize sediments in those streams more effectively to sustain wetlands and also restore habitats at creek mouths. And so that's a really exciting project. And, of course, wrapping up the EIR on the Sustainable Communities Strategy, and which in part addresses sea level rise. So those projects are all underway and should be wrapped up by the end of the year. And we believe that as part of the regional resilience strategy, we're going to need to continue to collaborate on governance. It's clearly a critical issue. And at present, the proposal is that that be addressed, recommendations about governance be addressed at towards the end of the process, when we know more about how best to parse authorities among different entities. And similarly, I mentioned we're going to be needing to look at some nature-based solutions for adaptation along the shoreline, and so that's why we believe it's important to integrate the Coastal Conservancy and the regional board in the partnership, as well as wastewater, stormwater managers, and other key water managers, flood control districts and agencies along the shoreline, because we believe there's going to be integrated solutions among these different entities that are going to yield success. So the task two contemplated applying the lessons learned from the Adapting to Rising Tides project around the region to build knowledge about how we adapt along the shoreline. So that is certainly still part of the project. And we're wrapping up, as I mentioned, phase one along the Alameda County shoreline by early summer. And the earthquake resilience considerations that ABAG is developing will be integrated with the strategy. Now, we've taken a look at an alternative schedule that's more accelerated. It's based on the outline of the Adapting to Rising Tides project, where we would first organize and gather data and do a vulnerability assessment and develop adaptation strategies, and of course, doing all this in a public process with a common thread of governance running through the effort. But this contemplates a four-year project, which would, of course, require considerable more resources in a much more rapid fashion than was proposed in the three-task outline. Now, as in addition to that, we've also taken a look at the scope, and Bruce just outlined a number of the other climate impacts that we're likely to experience here in the Bay Area. And we believe that eventually it will be necessary to develop a broader-based adaptation strategy that, that speaks to these other climate impacts that we're going to face. And this phasing just generally lays out an approach that we might follow, starting with the Resilient Shorelines effort, followed by subsequent phases that would address these other impacts, and ultimately leading to a regional strategy that's implemented in an adaptive management fashion, where we continue to learn from our implementation and monitoring what works and modify the strategy as we move forward. And with that, I'll conclude and suggest that we can look at these topics for future consideration. Thank you.
Great. No, those were very thorough and long presentations, but we only meet every other month as a group, and the idea was to ensure that we're fully apprised of what's been going on. There's been a lot of progress made. Just one quick question. As a region, just sort of putting this in context, is there any other metropolitan area in the country that has this extensive of an effort? And
there are in Southern California, for example. San Diego has done quite a bit of work, and Los Angeles is doing quite a bit of work, and New York is doing some work, and we regularly comb the internet for guidance from those projects, and we consult with them on the phone and so on.
On this regional of a scale?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Great. If I could just add, what most regions have that we don't have is a dominant city, one dominant city. So New York has done a tremendous set of work on a series of impacts, including coastal and shoreline impacts. New York did it, and the others in their region are following along. Chicago led the process for their area to do the work, and the others followed along. We just don't have other regions like this region. That's one. Our bay is a very different kind of thing that links us together. And two, the 101 cities and 9 counties without any one overwhelming dominant city to do the planning.
Any questions? We have another presentation with regard to the Plan Bay Area, but I want to make sure we have any questions answered. Okay. So thanks. I mean, I think we've been really fortunate to have the leadership here to be able to get this far. And I think especially, as you've said, the context that we've had to do this regionally, and that's why it makes sense for the JPC to sort of hold this process. Mark?
Yeah, one quick. I saw the great presentation. I saw the one element of the public outreach. I'm just wondering if there is I know this is could be problematic, that there be kind of like an open source inlet for public input. If there are other areas and somebody's sitting out there in the public say, hey, wait, you know, I know they did it this way, or I have an idea. Outside of being informing the public, is there a way for the public to get in before it's all developed?
That's a very good suggestion, and that's certainly in this region, as innovative as it is. And again, it's back to the handout here. Those are organizations that have jumped in over the last few years on a variety of issues to take this on. What we're talking about here is trying to organize and coordinate that and make that a more powerful movement in the region. But that still is based on individual innovation and organizational innovation.
Great. Right, we have one speaker card, Kirsten Schwind of Bay Localize. Sorry, got you while you were getting your tea.
thank you. I was honored to be involved in part of this process, and thank you, Bruce. You've worked incredibly hard on this. I was intrigued by a theme I saw in the earlier presentation from the economic development group and the business representatives of the theme of energy. I believe it's very important for both the task of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, also responding to the concern brought up by Mr. Luce and Mr. Marr about rising energy costs and the impacts of those on our economy. It's also a real opportunity to be an economic driver for our region. We have a lot of activity going on around the region in terms of localizing control over energy systems, investing in local renewable energy management and energy efficiency that makes our grids more resilient to the impacts of climate change, can be an economic driver for both small and large businesses in terms of investment in that in our region. And also, you know, addresses the goals of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and increasing the resilience of our grid. And so I saw that as a really nice synergy and would encourage our friends from the business sector to consider that as an economic driver for our region.
Great. Thank you. We appreciate the comment. There's sort of how we can use this as part of an economic development strategy. All right. That was informational. I have no other speaker cards. Item 5, we will get an update from ABAG and MTC staff on Plan Bay Area. Not one Bay Area, Plan Bay Area.
One plan, though, Mr. Chairman.
We should call it Healthy Bay Area.
One plan too many sometimes. this is really a word of warning that Plan Bay Area is coming soon again to a town near you. We're handing around a schedule of public hearings that we will be having on the draft plan, which is scheduled to be released next Friday, and the draft EIR, which is scheduled to be released the Friday after that. And what you will see on the sheet are a series of public hearings, one in each county, mostly concentrated in April, with the last set in May, on May 1st. And you'll also see three public hearings exclusively devoted to the EIR. One thing I want to make clear for members of the public who want to comment on the EIR, they could do so at the Plan Bay Area hearings, and I suppose vice versa. But we're legally obligated to have separate hearings for the EIR, so that's why they're there. And I also want to observe that this is not an exhaustive list. We are going to be meeting with each congestion management agency at the board level. We will also be hosting meetings, as we did in earlier rounds, with community-based organizations that they'll be hosting in their communities. And then we'll also be making presentations to our partner agencies, including the Air District, including BCDC, and including you. And that is all driving toward an adoption of the plan and the EIR in the summertime after, I think, about 3 years of work. So I can report that your staffs at ABAG and MTC are pretty much near exhaustion at this point in getting the work out, and we're still reviewing drafts to get the work ready to be released next week and the week following. Then we will be calling on you. I know most, if not all of you, will be attending one or more of these meetings. And you know how much fun they were the last time, and I expect they'll be just as much fun this time through, too. So that's the update. Stay tuned for a plan showing up in your mailbox.
I know that Brad and Mark are going to make sure there's plenty of wine at the Elks Lodge in Napa. Is that what you're going to do, right? Right. Any questions on this? This is predominantly the update we're getting, right?
John?
Yeah.
I just want to thank staff for their perseverance and their energy behind this, because I realize we're all getting to a point of saturation right now, and we're all getting a bit weary, but we still have one final push. So hang in there. It'll be a grand celebration after we adopt it. I hope somebody's planning on the champagne for afterwards.
So just to get clear, we've had discussion about the process. Who actually is going to be convening each of these and leading the presentation?
The format will be...
It's in Walnut Creek, so I think it's going to be you too, not me.
No.
If it's in Richmond, I'll come.
These will be quite different from the last round, and I hope we've learned a few lessons from the last round. There will actually be no presentation. We will have an open house at the beginning where the general topics of the plan are available to people and they can sort of learn at their pace. And then we will have a formal public hearing where folks will stride up to the microphone and have their 3 minutes to say what they want to say. And so these will be, I think, probably a little bit more conventional than what we tried last time, which had varying degrees of success or failure. So that will be the format that we'll follow at the Plan Bay Area hearings, and the EIR hearings will just be the hearing.
My understanding is in some of these communities, some elected officials are kicking them off by choice. The locally elected officials who serve on these regional agencies.
They'll be kicking them off just in the sense of welcoming people.
Right.
Don't expect
them to
be. And
ABAC and MTC staff are working with folks in each of these regions.
Oh, yes, we are.
All right. Any other comments? Okay. All right. Our last item. Yes, Jean?
So I'd like to underscore what he said. You know, we're doing more and more of these sort of open, you can even do it with questions, these open website places so people, maybe we can encourage them to make their comments on website rather than in person, and gives them more time to walk through the documents, et cetera. So are we doing that?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
There is, just to add, I think you're all probably familiar, we do have formal comment periods. I think there's about a 60-day comment period for the plan, or do I have that? Yeah, and a 45-day comment for the EIR. So we will be getting a lot of comments, we expect,
right?
Especially on the EIR, and we are obligated to respond to them all.
What's the tentative date that has been set for this coming to ABAG MTC?
We're looking at June and July, and if I had to bet money these days, I'd probably bet more on July than June. That's where we're heading toward.
Okay. All right. Item 6, new legislation, SB 792, proposed by Senator DeSaunier. We actually had a fair amount of discussion about this beforehand at the JPC Executive Committee. There's a lot of sort of vigorous discussion, and I know ABAG's Administrative Committee retreat had some discussion, and this is still going to some of the regional agency boards for more discussion. So I don't know if folks want to weigh in from each agency about the discussion this morning, but I'll just say it seemed to be the consensus was that there would be some more discussion of the legislation by the boards of each of the regional agencies, and then coming back with sort of how we move forward. We talked a bit about having a working committee of the JPC work with the senator about this issue. So if others can add to that from the discussion this morning, Mark?
I'll just add a little color to what you said. I think there's agreement that a lot of the things identified in this bill are things that we plan to do, and so there are some parts of it that don't mesh up real well in terms of funding and savings and how that gets dealt with. So I think we're all interested. I think we have common ground of seeing the issues listed here move forward. So we'll continue that discussion with the senator.
Others that want to sort of weigh in? The idea we would have this back on our agenda. I know Gene was prepared to go into a summary of the legislation, although most folks are probably familiar with it. We have a handout that's gone around. Actually, you know what? Let me make sure I don't think we've done that yet. For folks who weren't at executive, we'll hand out Gene's good summary identifying some of the issues about this. Right. Any other comments? So we'll have it back here after it's gone back to more of the agencies to have further discussion and possibly setting up a work group. Make sense?
So if I understand, you're going to have both individual agencies have some discussion, and then the planning committee is going to talk about it. Is anybody actually talking to DeSaunier on a regular basis?
Yeah, he's having conversations with
folks.
Okay, good.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. No, I think we're good. Let's folks have any questions about it? Anything else? Wow, that was a short discussion on that. All right. Board comment. Going around, any board comment? Any public comment? All right, that was a pretty thorough meeting this morning. We appreciate everybody being here. We are adjourning. Our next Joint Policy Committee meeting is scheduled for May 17th here.